Retrieving the data from USC was a three-man operation, so Kevin and Lenny pulled a reluctant but curious Roscoe in on the project. Fearing that he would be recognized, Kevin stayed off campus. Lenny and Roscoe went to USC together. Lenny stationed himself at a payphone outside the university's main computer center and called Kevin, who was stationed at a terminal at the offices of a friend. Kevin then instructed Lenny to tell Roscoe to mount a magnetic tape. Roscoe walked in and, dusting off his old social engineering skills, posed as a student working on a project, handed a tape to a computer operator, and asked him to mount it. Once that was accomplished, Roscoe returned to the payphone, where Lenny had Kevin on the line, and Kevin typed in the appropriate commands to transfer the files from the USC hard disk to the magnetic tape. Then Roscoe could retrieve the tape and hand it to Lenny. This complicated procedure had to be done a few times in order to build the collection of tapes, which were gradually stacking up at all-purpose storage in Mission Hills, where Lenny had rented a locker. Roscoe occasionally provided a blank tape from his workspace, but most of the tapes came from VPA. Kevin and Lenny both considered what they had accomplished. A tremendous feat. By having their own copy of the VMS source code, they could pick the operating system apart line by line, understand it, find its numerous flaws, and even, if they wanted, create a modified version, say with something like the Chaos Patch included. If Kevin and Lenny really wanted to be malicious, they could send contaminated software back to the Star Cluster, or even to the Software Distribution Center in Massachusetts, which generates exact copies of what it has received. People who work at a software distribution center are typically not engineers, and would have no way of checking to see if their copy of the information had been secretly altered. That meant that until the next release came from the developers, every copy of VMS that left the distribution center for a customer site would contain the corrupted software. When the engineers back at the Star Cluster discovered that someone had broken in, they had no way of knowing whether or not their master source code had been corrupted, so they were forced to go through a laborious week-long exercise of installing all the magnetic tape backups of their master files and comparing them with what was on the disks to make sure that every change was authorized. But Kevin and Lenny had no plans to visit havoc on the software. Their electronic joyride through digital was harmless by their standards. They were copying the source code, but in their minds they weren't taking anything. As they saw it, they weren't even stealing, because they left the original software intact, just where it was and just how it was. By the same idiosyncratic view of the law, when Kevin and Lenny encountered a security program called X-Safe, which they learned about while reading the confidential electronic mail of an engineer named Henry Tang, they had no qualms about taking it. Tang appeared to be the program's chief architect, and Digital Confidential was stamped all over any memos concerning X-Safe. The program wasn't due to be released for another year, and Kevin wanted the source code. It didn't take Tang long to notice they had been in, so he changed his password. Getting Tang's new password was a particular challenge, as he was choosing from a list of randomly generated passwords. Although the password Tang picked did not echo back on his screen, the list from which he chose went to a log file he kept, which Lenny and Kevin could see. They went to the log file, found the list of choices, and eliminated their way to Tang's new password. When Tang discovered they were back in, he moved to a machine that was on the EasyNet but had disabled inbound connections. Through reading mail, Kevin and Lenny found the name of the machine Tang was now on. When they tried the set host command, a way to link one computer to another, they got a response that all inbound connections would be refused. Figuring that Tang himself had to have a way of connecting to the computer, they started looking at terminal servers, computers that act as switchboards making connections between computers on a network, in the development center, and finally found a hidden avenue that gave them a way to reach the machine. They continued the task of transferring out the X-Safe source code. Perusing the personal mail of network security experts like Brian Reed and corporate security people like Chuck Bushy and Kent Anderson, who was in charge of European security, was a good way for Kevin and Lenny to track the progress of the hunt. They read mail in which network security people were told to drop what they were doing to work on the case. At one point, it appeared to Kevin and Lenny that at least three people in corporate security were working on the problem full-time. Even if they were caught, Lenny and Kevin had read enough about computer crime to know that Digital might be reluctant to press charges against them. They were aware that few of the computer crimes detected were ever reported to the police, and still fewer were made public through criminal charges. Lenny and Kevin knew that companies worried about having their vulnerabilities publicized.